Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for July 27th, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson, and joining me today are Slash Film weekend editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And writers Y Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
So before we get started, I figured we've been talking a lot about the Disney-Fox deal. HT, you wrote a quick article about this earlier today. Give us the latest update.
So the latest update that will essentially clear the path for the Disney-Fox deal to be finalized is that the shareholders from 21st Century Fox and the Walt Disney Company both voted to approve the $71.3 billion mega merger between the two companies. And that took place this morning and will essentially clear the path for the deal to finally be completed in the first half of 2019.
Okay, so there you have it. There's not much more information that we know other than that. But yeah, this has been, you know, sort of a long time coming. I think everyone is well aware of how we all feel about this. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast before, but I just thought it was important to mention that the shareholders had approved that deal. All right, so let's dive into the real news of the day. And first up is arguably one of the, I think the topic that's probably going to generate the most conversation among all of us. Brad, tell us what the deal is with MoviePass.
Oh, MoviePass just keeps batting 1,000. Apparently last night in the evening, around the time all the sneak preview screenings of Mission Impossible Fallout were happening, MoviePass went down. People couldn't access the app. They couldn't get it set up so they could buy tickets, and no one knew what was going on. MoviePass put out tweets saying that there was some issue they were looking into that was preventing people from buying tickets. Apparently, it didn't affect e-ticketing. But during this time, the reason the service went down, it was discovered this morning in an SEC filing from MoviePass that the reason the app wasn't working is because they ran out of money. And so the tickets couldn't be paid for. And so the service wasn't working because of that. So in order to get the service back up and running, MoviePass, or rather their owner company, Helios and Matheson Analytics, borrowed $5 million to get it back up and running so that it would go smoothly. So some people are still having issues with the service working today as far as the app's full functionality or buying tickets. But things aren't looking good for MoviePass. The stock for Helios and Matheson took a dive pretty recently to its lowest point. There was a reverse of that where they were able to get it back up through, I believe, what is called a reverse stock split. And so basically now, though, with this, the stock price has dropped down again, and it's just looking like it's going to be an ongoing problem for MoviePass. In the SEC filing, it even says, if the company is unable to make required payments to its merchant and fulfillment processors, the merchant and fulfillment processors may cease processing payments for MoviePass Inc., which would cause a MoviePass service interruption. Such a service interruption occurred on July 26, 2018. Such service interruptions could have a material adverse effect on MoviePass's ability to retain its subscribers. This would have an adverse effect on the company's financial position and results of operations. So this is just something, again, that's going to worry users, creating more problems. People are already complaining about how the surge pricing for MoviePass is working. I've seen some people who tried to go see Mission Impossible Fallout this morning see that there was surge pricing for the earliest morning screenings in which there were only a few seats sold. So that doesn't really sound like the definition of surge pricing to me. But it seems like MoviePass is probably just trying to get as much money back as they can by having surge pricing for opening weekend showtimes, regardless of whether or not they're showtimes that are actually popular at the time you're buying them.
Right. So, HT, I think last night I saw you went to see Mission Impossible Fallout, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you use your MoviePass or try to?
I tried to, and it was down for me because of the surge. I figured at first it was because of surge pricing, because that's what happened to me before, but I learned this morning that, yeah, it was because the service was out of money, and I was hoping that they would give me a refund, but I'm guessing that won't be the case since they probably don't have enough money to even continue operating on it. But
yeah, I was wondering
we'll
if, like, the introduction of surge pricing, even before this most recent shutdown, was just a way for them to sort of you know, build up their finances, because they've been sort of teetering on the edge for a little while now. Brad, do you think that this is the end of, you know, the beginning of the end of MoviePass?
I mean, it certainly seems like it. I don't know what other tricks they seem to have up their sleeve or how much money they're going to be able to round up to keep going. But, you know, the fact that they ran out of money and the service shut down because of it, you know, this is like somebody who can't pay their water bill, you know, because they don't have the money and their water got shut off. And now they're barely getting by paying, you know, like the past due amount, essentially. And, you know, this is just not a good look for them, not a good start. And yeah, I feel like it's not going to work out for them in the end. It's obviously, you know, people, investors are worried because, and as you can see, because the stock price dropped and it's not good. You know, I obviously MoviePass people should try and enjoy it while they can, even though most of the enjoyment has been taken out by the surge pricing model. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But don't forget, there's a great new AMC A-list subscription that actually works very well. So
yeah, the thing is, like, I feel like listeners and, you know, people send us angry emails when we talk about AMC and sort of diss MoviePass. But I feel like, you know, the company sort of has it coming with the way that they've been, you know, conducting themselves over the past few months. And like stuff like this, you know, for people who listen to this podcast and who read slashfilm.com, these are the kind of people who love movies and presumably love to go see new things on opening weekend or opening night even. And, you know, when surge pricing dominates the entire opening weekend, and basically that leaves you, what, like the middle of the next week or something before the surge pricing disappears, it just seems like it's not, you know, these are the reasons that we're souring on MoviePass as a business model. So I mean, I don't know what else we can really do to appease the people who are always like complaining about us complaining about MoviePass, but like they're digging their own grave here. It's not like we have it out for them. We're just sort of trying to take a step back and look at everything as objectively as we can, and these decisions are just I mean, like, when you run out of money, that's not good. I don't know what else to say, so hopefully we don't get too many angry emails about that. I guess let's move on to our next item, and that is some unfortunate news for Andy Serkis's new movie Mowgli. HT, tell us what's going on.
So Warner Brothers has sold Mowgli to Netflix for the worldwide distribution rights, and dropped the film from its planned October theatrical release. But in Netflix's planned release of the film, it will premiere on in theaters to showcase Andy Serkis's 3D effects for the film, but will mostly be intended for the streaming service. We don't know the exact details of its release, except that it's planned for 2019.
So we don't have any idea about how many theaters or anything. I think when they released Mudbound, I think that was last year, they put it out in like 16 theaters. Do we know any numbers or anything?
Yeah, no numbers were stated, but assuming some sort of select number of theaters, similar to Mudbound, but probably in a greater extent because the film has such a star-studded cast, including Andy Serkis himself, as well as Christian Bale, Kate Blanchett, Benedict Cumberbatch. And it's been just gestating for a long time and delayed for several times as well by Warner Brothers.
So I think a lot of that was due to the visual effects that they were working on. And Chris, I think when this news broke, you mentioned that you sort of like felt bad for Andy Serkis because he's been working on this for so long, right?
Yeah, it seems like it honestly feels like it's been like 20 years he's been working on it. I know that's not the actual number, but it feels like it's been a very long time. And, you know, not that Netflix is the kiss of death, but it's clear he put all this work into it. And he was, you know, there's even a quote in the source the story came from where he was like, "Oh, I was really hoping everyone would see this on the big screen." But obviously that's just not going to happen. Overall, like, you know, Netflix will put it on the big screen somewhere, but I doubt it's going to be a major release like he was hoping.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Like, HT, I think you mentioned in your article, like, The Cloverfield Paradox, another movie that was intended originally for a theatrical release and ended up going straight to Netflix. But that one, I think, was marketed as going straight to Netflix. Like, they had that big Super Bowl reveal of the trailer and, hey, surprise, it's on Netflix right now or right after the game kind of thing. This one, they've already had trailers out and, like, featurettes and things. Like, I Can anyone think of another time where a movie has been like full steam ahead in terms of marketing and then been just relegated to Netflix like this? This might be a new thing.
I mean, the closest probably comparison is Annihilation, which did have a theatrical release in the U.S. and had plenty of trailers, but internationally only got released on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. So, Chris, let's talk about Altered Carbon Season 2. What's going on with the new lead actor of that show?
Yeah, so Netflix just gave Altered Carbon a second season, which I gotta say I'm a little surprised about because I felt like no one was even talking about this show, but I guess it had enough viewers to get a second season. So the main character has been recast. Joel Kinnaman played him in the first season, and now Anthony Mackie is playing him in the second season. And if that sounds strange to you, you obviously haven't seen the show because it's actually built into the premise. It's complicated and weird, and I'm not going to break it down too much, but basically it's set in this futuristic world where people can upload their consciousness into brand new bodies. And as a result, people can essentially live forever. Just, you know, anytime their old body dies, they just swap into a new body. So this is pretty much always the plan. And even though I'm not a big fan of the show, I reviewed the first season. I didn't really care for it. I kind of do like the idea that maybe if it gets like a third season, they'll recast the lead again. They'll just keep doing that. That's like a very different approach. And I can't think of another show that's really done anything like that. So on that front, it's interesting, but I'm not exactly pumped for a second season of this.
So, forgive me because I haven't seen the show, but is this similar in any way to the controversy that was surrounding Ghost in the Shell, the Scarlett Johansson movie from, what was that, last year, I guess? Do you know what I'm talking about, where it was like an Asian character that had a white lead, and now this show had a white lead and now a black lead, but what's the name of this character?
The main character is, his name is Takashi Kovacs, and it is a bit similar, although to Altered Carbon's credit, it actually has a fair number of flashbacks to the original Takashi Kovacs played by Byron Mann. So he sort of shares equal screen time with Joel Kinnaman, but it is sort of that same sort of Ghost in the Shell thing. But I don't know if it generated as much controversy as that film.
Do we know if that original actor is going to be coming back for season two, or is just the Anthony Mackie thing the only thing we know about this season so far?
Yeah, Anthony Mackie is the only confirmed casting we have right now. And the show is based on a series of books, and the books jump like hundreds of years into the future. So, you know, like every book spans like, you know, a millennia essentially. So it's possible like no one from the first season will be back, but you never know.
Jeez. Okay, man. Yeah, I will definitely link to your review of the first season of Altered Carbon in the show notes. Let's move on to our next topic, and that is Star Wars Resistance, the new anime series from the people at Lucasfilm. HT, what's the latest with this show?
So, the German Disney XD channel released a synopsis for the first episode of Star Wars Resistance, and a Twitter user generously translated the synopsis, which read, "Resistance fighter Poe Dameron tasked young pilot Kazuda Kaz Shiono with spying on the First Order. At the time, little was known about the secretive organization and its strength. In order to fulfill his mission, Kaz travels to the space station Colossus, which is being used by many ships as a port to do refuel and repairs. However, there are also dangerous races taking place there. After Kaz bragged with his piloting skills at his arrival there, he is soon drawn into one of the races." So here in the episode titled The Recruit, we learn about the main character for the series, who apparently is Kazuda Kaz Shiono, and also that this series will have a lot to do with pod racing, which creator Dave Filoni had teased before.
So, HG, as an anime fan, and you write a regular column about this at SlashFilm.com, do you think that this, I guess, general plot is appropriate for the anime style? Are you excited about seeing what they do with the idea of, like, regular races on the show?
Well, pod racing, yeah, sounds something very much in line with anime series that I've seen, especially and like classic films like Akira, for example. So I feel like definitely it lends to the anime aesthetic and the experience of that. So it's hard to say without seeing any images or any official marketing from this series yet, apart from the image featuring like an anime R2-D2. But even then, it just kind of looks more stylized than anything.
Right.
So we'll see. I am down for this series. I haven't seen a lot of Star Wars TV series, to be fair, but I think that I really enjoy the anime art style, and I like that usually that it's hand-drawn. I hope that in this case it will be hand-drawn. So I much prefer that kind of animation style over a lot of the 3D or CG animation style that we've seen.
Brad, I think you're probably the biggest Star Wars fan on this episode of the podcast. What is your history with the Star Wars TV shows, and are you looking forward to Resistance as a big Star Wars fan yourself?
You know, I dug the Clone Wars when it was on. I'm excited that that got announced for a revival at Comic-Con. I enjoyed Star Wars Rebels, even though I haven't finished it. I liked what I saw, and I've been meaning to finish it now that the series is over. As for a Star Wars anime series, the only thing that's really attracting me to it is the fact that it's Star Wars, because I've never really been attracted to anime as an animation style. It's just something that even as a kid, I couldn't get into. I've just never really liked, you know, how it looks aesthetically, even though most of the stories at the center of anime shows and movies sound extremely appealing to me, it's hard for me to get past the animation style. I'm just not a fan of it. So I might give it a shot to see, you know, if the characters are interesting enough, and maybe, you know, maybe the animation style, it will appeal to me simply because it's set in Star Wars. But it's not something that I'm necessarily super excited about.
I'm sort of right there with you. I've dabbled here and there, but I have not taken the full dive into the anime end of the pool. HT, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you have any, like, off the top of your head recommendations for
Full Metal Alchemist?
Okay, well, yeah, there you go. You have one locked and loaded and ready for us.
That's my favorite anime, and I think it's also the best sort of gateway anime too, because it's the perfect blend of action, humor, romance, comedy, and it, especially the original series, there's two series of them, Fullmetal Alchemist and Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. It gets quite philosophical in the first series, but it's also really tightly plotted and has really great characters. Don't watch the live action movie on Netflix, but definitely give it a chance.
All right, yeah. So any other listeners who may share our same concerns, I would recommend checking out Full Metal Alchemist. HG, do you know where you can find that? Is that on Netflix right now, or is that somewhere else? Do you know?
I think Brotherhood is actually on Netflix.
Okay, cool.
So you can watch that on Netflix.
All right, moving on to our next topic. One of the questions we're wondering about with the new Halloween movie coming out is, how will the film handle the absence of Donald Pleasance as Dr. Loomis? Brad, what do you think the answer to that question is?
I actually know the answer to that question, and I'll give it to you. So for those who may not necessarily know what we're talking about, in the original Halloween, one of the chief characters is Dr. Loomis, who is played by actor Donald Pleasance. He's the one who has followed Michael Myers for years. He's the only one who really knows the true evil that is inside of him, and he's the one trying to warn everyone in Haddonfield what a threat it is that this person is walking around their town. And he's one of the survivors at the end of the movie. He unloads some shots into Michael Myers before the body disappears, and we're left wondering what happened to him. Now, since the new Halloween that's coming out later this year picks up 40 years after the events of that first movie and disregards all of the sequels, a lot of people have been wondering where that leaves Dr. Loomis, especially because the actor Donald Pleasance actually passed away in 1995. And he actually appeared in all of the sequels up until that point. The last one that came out before he died actually came out the year that he died, which was Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. And director David Gordon Green was asked about the presence Dr. Loomis might have in this chapter that takes place 40 years after the original. And apparently what they did is they got a Donald Pleasance sound-alike, since they couldn't really bring him back in that way because Donald Pleasance has passed, but they wanted to have him some kind of presence. And so it sounds like they didn't get an actor to double him as far as being a body, but we'll hear his voice. And the trailer might give us some hints as to how that will work, because there are a couple shots of Dr. Loomis in a courtroom setting. So we might hear some courtroom recordings or maybe, you know, some kind of testifying or a statement to the police about what happened that night when Michael Myers murdered people in Haddonfield. So they apparently the sound like they got is really good. It's cool that they're bringing Dr. Loomis into the equation somehow without, you know, recasting the character or, you know, or anything like that. So I think that's a good move, considering Loomis was such a big part of the original Halloween and the franchise that continued after it. And as a little teaser, Green said there are some other nods that fans will notice in the new Halloween. And there apparently is also another kind of voice cameo that fans might recognize towards the end, maybe even in the credits, Green said.
Interesting. I wonder who that could be. Chris, I know you're a big fan of Halloween, and this new movie is like one of your most anticipated films of the year. What do you think about this news?
It sounds neat. They've actually done this before in the Halloween series. Halloween H2O at the beginning of that film has an actor basically mimicking Donald Pleasance's voice, giving like a little speech over the opening credits. I will say the guy they got for H2O sounds nothing like him, so I'm hoping this guy is better, and I'm sure he will be. But it's not unprecedented, but it is neat that they're paying tribute to him in some fashion.
I haven't seen H2O in a while, and I never realized that was a different actor that did. I thought they just used like the lines that like came from one of the other movies.
I don't know why they didn't, because they're literally just taking lines from the first film, but yeah. rather than just play the lines, they got someone else to read them. And I'm sure there's some reasoning behind that. Maybe the audio quality wasn't as good. I don't know, but they did hire an actor, and I'm still not sure why.
Do you guys think that, I mean, I'm frankly a little surprised that they're going this route instead of doing like a digital creation, you know, like a Grand Moff Tarkin kind of thing. We've seen Disney has been pushing the envelope in this regard for a few years now. I personally thought that Grand Moff Tarkin and young Leia in Rogue One looked terrible, but Ant-Man and the Wasp recently came out, and the young versions of Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Douglas in that movie both look really, really good, and I feel like we're not too far off from an entire movie that features a, you know, a digitally de-aged character like that. Do you think...
Well, we'll have The Irishman soon.
That's right, and I think Ang Lee has one with Will Smith where I think it's called Gemini Man, where he's supposed to be like maybe fighting a younger version of himself or something like that. That I think that's supposed to be coming out either late this year or maybe sometime next year. Chris and or Brad, do you guys have any thoughts about you know, like whether or not you would have liked to see something like that in this new Halloween movie, or are you glad that we're avoiding that for the time being?
I mean, if it were like a small thing, I don't think I would have been bothered by it, because I'm one of the people who actually wasn't completely turned off by the digital recreation of Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One. Not that the ramifications of it weren't a little bit unsettling and like raised some eyebrows, but I thought that they did a pretty good job with most of the shots of Tarkin in that movie. Leia a little bit less so. But yeah, I think that's at this point, it's kind of unnecessary, to do it, because Dr. Loomis was an older guy when the original Halloween came out, and it's 40 years later. So he would have to look much older, and we've never seen what a Donald Pleasance at that age would look like. So it doesn't really work quite as well as it does with those other digitally recreated characters.
Yeah, that's true. Chris, you have any thoughts?
I would hate that, and I'm glad they didn't do it. I also don't know if they had the budget for that for this movie, because I feel like they shot this very cheaply. I think that's like part of the Blumhouse method, where they shoot things very cheap, and that's how they make a lot of money. But if they had done it, I would have been very weirded out by it, so I'm glad it didn't happen.
All right, and joining us now is Slash Film Managing Editor Jacob Hall. Jacob, I wanted to bring you on for this news item because I know that you're a big fan of the Universal Studios theme parks, and specifically the Universal Studios theme parks in Orlando, Florida, and there is a bit of news involving what may be to come in that area. Tell us about that.
Yeah, these are my home parks. This is where I spent all my vacations growing up, so any news here is news I'm very interested in. And today's news is about a fourth park down there, which we've been hearing about this for literally years. Universal, unlike Disney, which has this Manhattan-sized sprawl of swampland in which to expand, Universal is essentially filled up all of its space years ago in Florida, and so whenever they buy more land or and expand, it's news because it says their plans are a little more transparent. They can't hide it as well. So when they start steadily buying up enough land for a new theme park over the past few years, which they have been, you know something's coming, especially when they keep on building more and more hotels. And in this case, there is a fourth park all but confirmed. The Orlando Sentinel, via Inside the Magic, has all this from a Q&A with Comcast folks who own NBC Universal. And I'm just going to go ahead and read their quote. We are looking into it. We love the theme park business. It's one of our best, most consistent businesses. We think we have a lot of a very long runway. Another park in Florida would have the advantage of turning Florida from a 2 or 3 day destination to a potentially a week long destination. We think that would be attractive. And this comes with all the, this pretty much backs up what we already know, which is that this fourth park is coming, just a matter of when. And the name that emerged out of this is Fantastic Worlds, which is one, just generic enough to be anything, but two, just exciting enough to grab your attention. And I know that they haven't confirmed what Fantastic Worlds is, but it reminds me of Islands of Adventure, the neighboring park in Universal Studios Florida. For those of you who don't know, there's Universal Studios Florida, the home park, the studio park designed in the same style as the park out in Hollywood. There's Islands of Adventure, a more immaculately themed, more Disney-like park, even though it has its own Universal twist. And very recently they opened up Volcano Bay, a massive immersive themed water park. So this will be the fourth park. And we don't know what will be here yet. I mean, the rumors for years have been that they'll have another Harry Potter section to go along with the two they already have. Lord of the Rings has been sought by both Disney and Universal for years. Super Nintendo Land, which is coming to Universal Studios Japan in 2020, is coming to America and Florida. We just don't know where yet. And the rumors have been the core home at Universal Studios Park. But Fantastic World is probably a better fit for that. It has a lot more room and would definitely give a sort of a star-studded centerpiece to this new area. Ben, I know you're not as big on theme parks as I am. How does this sound to you? Is this a destination?
I mean, the title, like you mentioned, Fantastic Worlds, is like so vague, but I feel like it could definitely encompass a lot of different things there. And I think Universal, I mean, as like as transparent as that quote that you read is, I mean, it's completely true. It's like if they add some other, you know, high profile, high value intellectual property to that park, it very well could turn Universal Studios into a week-long destination. And that's extremely important for them right now, you know, on the brink of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge getting ready to open up. So they have to be, you know, sort of scrambling to figure out what they're going to do to be able to compete with what Disney has going on, you know, with Star Wars. So, I mean, I'm not sure what I would want there, but I mean, really, any of these options kind of sounds cool to me. Do you think, like previously, we've written about the possibility of like a Star Trek world, or maybe even like a Jurassic world build out, sort of into a full land, because we know that, like for example, the Jurassic Park ride here in Hollywood is being rethemed from Jurassic Park to Jurassic World, and the rumors swirling around indicate that they might, Universal might be interested in sort of capitalizing on that property because it's so successful for them as a movie, into a larger theme park space. What do you think the most likely culprit is here for what could end up in Fantastic World?
Well, I think Super Nintendo World is going here for sure. I think that's, I know the space that was rumored for it in Universal Studios Florida, it seems a little small in comparison to what they could do with a whole new land. So I think we'll see this here. There is a Jurassic Park land in Islands of Adventure right next door to this, but there is no Jurassic World land. And Universal has not been shy about having two Harry Potter parks. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have a Jurassic World park and Jurassic Park park. Mm-hmm. And part of me would love the idea of Jurassic Park Islands of Adventure is this fully functioning theme park. You go in there, everything's okay. Whereas Jurassic World is themed like everything's gone wrong, everything's torn down and rummaged, and you feel like you shouldn't be there. I feel like that would be my, if I was Universal Studios creative, that's how I would pitch those two separate lands, keep them distinct from one another. But I guess the important thing here is that Universal is doing all this in reaction to Galaxy's Edge, yes, but Disney was reacting to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which really changed the game for theme parks. So we're watching these two theme park titans battle each other back and forth. Universal changed the game with Harry Potter. If you have not been to the Harry Potter parks in Florida or California, they are immersive. They are beautifully designed. You step into them and you feel like you're in another world. And by all accounts, Disney is trying to take all of that and more with Galaxy's Edge, which is going to feature like shop vendors and waiters in full alien makeup and costume, all in universe souvenirs, like stunts happening around you, the storyline following you. So Fantastic Worlds, based on this premise and the IP that they're pursuing for it, if you believe all those rumors, suggest that Universal says, okay, you're going to take our land and up it? Well, we'll build an entire park of lands like that and up you. So that's what it feels like to me. And the winner here is theme park fans. I mean, if these two are battling to make each other better, then that's the best possible scenario. I guess my one complaint, and this is something that really drives me up a wall, honestly, is that Universal and Disney are so obsessed with IPs now and recognizable franchises that it'll never get another attraction like the original Pirates of the Caribbean, original Haunted Mansion, rides that come from an original place and exist only in that park. And that continues to bum me out. But I do think that if we're now in the business of creating recognizable worlds and letting fans enter them, this is never a better time to want to be in that theme park experience.
Yeah, I think you're right. And as far as immersion goes, if Super Nintendo Land is what happens here, I wonder if they're just going to start. I mean, they might as well go all the way and just give everyone mushrooms as they walk through the door. Just let them go wild in the park.
Slash Film readers may remember that Universal patented a bunch of ride designs around the time that Super Nintendo Land was announced. And there's some pretty wild stuff. I mean, we've essentially confirmed a Mario Kart ride. There's plans for a Zelda thing. But there's also some ride designs that look like they could be for Metroid. And my favorite one is a ride system that simulates you being a minecart to jumping over gaps in the track, a la old school Donkey Kong. So, like I said, if you ever want a very specific Nintendo experience, they seem to have it in the cards. They seem to be planning it. And the fact that they have looked back to Donkey Kong Country and said, remember those levels where you're jumping over tracks in a minecart, that could be a ride. The fact that that's running through their mind makes me really curious about what's in this fourth park beyond Nintendo, because if that's Nintendo, what about Lord of the Rings? What about Star Trek? There's so many options here.
Definitely. All right, well, that's going to bring us to the end of today's edition of Slash Film Daily. Where can we find more of your work online? Let's go with Brad.
You can find me on Twitter at Ethan_Anderton. Writing at Slash Film all the time as well, and also my own podcast, Go Flix Yourself, available on iTunes and some other podcasting platforms.
HT?
I'm every day at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at htranbuie.
Chris?
I, too, am at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413.
Jacob?
You can find me on slashfilm.com every single day, and on Twitter, where I'm at Jacob S. Hall.
And you can find me writing at slashfilm.com as well. I am on Twitter at Ben Pears. And you can find more about all the stories we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside this episode's show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find at slashfilm.com. We have a bunch of really awesome Mission Impossible content up on the site this week in celebration of Mission Impossible Fallout, so check that out. You can subscribe to Slash Film Daily on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, and all the popular podcast apps. Please feel free to send your feedback, questions, comments, and concerns to us at peter@slashfilm.com, and be sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll talk to you on Monday.